Oak session number 13205, reel 3.
Mr. Webster, reel 3.
Resuming the report of the Bismarck Hood action, I can remember just prior to us leaving Scapa with the Hood, I went on board the Hood to take it to Legovis trained operators practical exam. I can well remember the old commission tell now. Can't remember his name. Nice old chap. And he passed me. But I do remember the feeling that I had when I went on board the Hood. After the spick and span Prince of Wales, the Hood seemed shabby. Rust. Remember seeing some torpedo tubes that looked pretty grim. I think coupled with this, when I look back as a sailor, I don't think that the Hood should ever have gone on that mission. And neither do I think that the Prince of Wales should have. During the action, we had civilian on board from Vickers that were trying to correct faults in our main armament. Hardly the combination that could face a ship of the Bismarck's class and efficiency. They were. We didn't realise what a ship she was until she was cornered by the Home Fleet, aided by the Mediterranean Fleet, and the pummeling that that ship took. I have heard since that she was scuttled. Seemingly the Jerrys didn't want the steel, the specially processed steel, to be discovered. But that's probably, it's hearsay and probably not right.
Why should the Hood have been in that state as compared with the Prince of Wales, do you think?
Well, the Hood was an old ship. I knew she was used as the, she was the top of the tops in the British fleet. But she'd been in commission for years. She had the gunpowder, but she didn't have the armour plating. They reckoned her armour plating was next to nothing. So the consequence was that the Bismarck's shells went through her like cheese. She had no resistance, which is, thinking about it after, I know all hindsight comes in, and I do think about these things. I think, poor old Hood, she should never have gone on this. When we did have other battleships, the King George V, I think the combination of King George V and the learning Prince of Wales would have given the Bismarck and the Oregon a good time. In fact, I have read a bit that you do. You read up. I remember a report by the skipper of the Admiral Lutyens of the Bismarck that he was under the impression that he was engaging the King George V. And had he known that he was being engaged by another battleship, the Immense, he turned off. I think he wouldn't have turned away, he would have turned in. And as I say, there again, I think the Prince would have succumbed to anything that he chucked at us. I'm saying, you know, it's all very well saying, oh my goodness, what a navy. It was a good navy. But we had very little time to prepare ourselves. We had old stuff trying to fight the new German stuff, and we were outclassed. Events proved. When the supplies from America and we got our shipbuilding in order, we were more than a match for the Germans.
What's happened after the Prince of Wales turned away from the Bismarck?
Now, I have to think a little. We turned away to starboard. And I think that was instrumental in saving the ship. I think had we not turned, we'd have been straddled. We'd have had a few more of the two that hit us. And we kept a respectful distance. Now, the order of seniority in the Navy meant that I think it was the Norfolk, had the senior captain. He took charge of the operation. So we were faced with the fact that a battleship was under the command of a cruiser, owing to the seniority complex in the Navy, which I suppose is fair enough. We did spot the Bismarck and the Eugen on two occasions. By then, visibility was as bad as it had ever been. And on one occasion, a salvo was fired by the Prince of Wales. Fortunately, Bismarck didn't reply. As I say, she might have been under the misapprehension that we were the King George V. And so we parted company. The shock of the hood going was dwelling on the crew. We just couldn't believe it. But there it was.
Did you see anything of the casualties and damage on the Prince of Wales?
Yes. Our lower bridge was completely gutted. There were quite a few casualties there. One lad I remember, I think he was a boy signalman. He was dying. There was a radar room, received a direct hit, presumably from the Eugen, and the operators, numbered about six, they were all killed. Also the 525 gun platforms were raked, and during the after the action, I saw a stretcher being carried along, and I was informed that it was Esmond Knight, who I now know to be an actor. Seemingly he was blinded, as far as I recollect, by cordite flash. The damage control people were led by a commissioned shipwright by the name of Murch, and he did marvellous work. He had to shore up on one side of the Prince of Wales, we had taken in 700 ton of water. Our speed was reduced to 14 knots. Little things that you see. After we parted company with the Jerrys and were more or less motionless while repairs were carried out, I looked up on the aerials and there were some Icelandic birds settled. And also there was a huge array of hose pipes on the deck, and playing amongst the hose pipes, some of which were spurting water, was a little black cat. Such is the difference between violence and, I suppose, nature. We had quite a few dead. Now, I do not know the number. But we made tracks for Reykjavik. The authorities were concerned about the presence of U-boats. After all, the Prince of Wales was steaming at a reduced speed. There were anxious times. Oh, during my account of the action, we did see the swordfish of the aircraft carrier. Was it the Art Royal? I think so. Attack Bismarck. But I understand that they received a fair old whacking and no hits were obtained on that attack. Although in recent or in after events, Bismarck was torpedoed, received a hit to her stern, which certainly slowed her. And of course she went to making for Brest, I understand. She met her fate with the home fleet and the Mediterranean fleet. And by goodness, they had some gathering there. Rodney, Nelson, they had everything they could pour. Cruisers, destroyers. And I remember it was announced on our ship's tannoy that the Bismarck had sunk with colours flying. And three cheers went up on the Prince of Wales. A certain amount of those cheers, I'm sure, were for the gallant fight that the Bismarck put up. Sailors respect sailors.
So, were you then with the Prince of Wales whilst it was being repaired?
Now, I've got to scratch my memory. Oh, well, I was on her at sea. Now then, we went into Iceland, and owing to the, was it Geneva Convention or international law, we were given 24 hours by the Norwegian authority, or by the Icelandic authorities, to refuel. We were not allowed to take our dead ashore. A lot of us were a bit bitter about that. But then, international law. We left Iceland, and on the way back we buried our dead at sea, which was really the best place.
was it done?
These sailors were sewn up in canvas covering. A small launching affair was rigged, and as each man was put on the launching pad, the padre was there conducting the service, and a Union Jack, a white ensign, was on the canvas bag, which slipped into the sea, and the white ensign was then used for the next one. Now, I only witnessed two, and of course we still had our duties to do, and I was no doubt given other duties. I'm sorry if I've got to keep on going back, but I must give one event that happened during the Bismarck action. I was allotted aircraft wave. We had a Walrus aircraft on board. Her job, obviously, was to spot gunneries full of gel. I was on there approximately 2 hours, and then I was told, you can pack up the aircraft watch. Why? She never took off. Well, she did, but she went right over the side. She was dipped. Whether it was mechanical trouble, I don't know, but she never partook in the action. Another thing I could never understand, we were told, and information was given by the captain of the Prince of Wales, within reason, of what the ship had done, what we were going to do. Now, we were given to understand, and as communication ratings, we appreciated it, that with the modern radar that the Prince carried, we could engage the enemy when they were well over the horizon. And we just couldn't come to terms with the fact that we were taken in to 17,000 yards. Whether it was a fault on the radar, or whether radar findings just couldn't be relied on. Probably with their 1418 way of thinking about modern appliances. Anyhow, they were never used. And as that sailor said, what are we going to do? Ram them, when we all knew that we should have been engaged in the Bismarck long before we saw her. But we never did. Anyhow, we came back to Scapa Flow. There was at the time a certain amount of ill feeling. Obviously, it's so long ago now that I shan't be doing any harm saying this, but there was antagonism between the King George V and the Prince of Wales. So much so that when we arrived in Scapa, it was a natural thing that the watch ashore could go ashore, and the only place of refuge ashore was in the flotter canteen, where beer was served in unlimited quantities, which is fair enough. I was duty watch on board, so I didn't partake, but I understand from members of our crew that did that there were some nasty scenes ashore when the Prince of Wales crew and the King George V crew met. The Prince of Wales lads were told so many times prior to the action that the King George V was coming up, and she never turned up. She was still coming up when everything was over. Now, that's, I'm speaking entirely from the sailors' point of view. I'm not querying. There probably were very good reasons why the KG5 never joined us. But at the same time, as a sailor, I think it would have been good if she had. And I think the Bismarck would have been settled there. I think the two of us would have done her. But there you are. That's it. So anyhow, I was in Iceland, back from Iceland to Scapa Flow, and on the 11th of October 41, I was drafted back to Devonport Barracks.
But with this rivalry between Prince of Wales and King George V's crews, did it ever result in fisticuffs?
Well, I should say that ashore, in the Flotta canteen that night, it probably did. Knowing Matlows, when they get a drop of beer in, when the beer's in, the brain's out. But it was really unnecessary. There was no need of it for the two ships to have fought. But that's one of those things. That's human nature, I suppose. I expect the Prince started taking the mickey out of the KG5 crew. Where were you, bees? But there were similar events. I know that when we refueled in Scapa, the Royal Marines, who used to look after all the refueling pipes, they had a bit of a do-up with the blokes on the old tanker. I think such words as, "Why did you yellow bees get out of it?" Now look, this is not high shall we say, this is not really Navy strategy. It's just the old common Matlows and that whooping each other, and it was forgotten. No sooner than it happened, it was forgotten. It was never, I never heard it mentioned at all during my turn in the Navy about the KG5 being a bit slack coming up and that. That happened on the spot, and really best forgotten.
So you said you left the Prince of Wales in October 41.
I left the Prince of Wales the 11th of October 41, and I joined my favourite barracks, HMS Drake, which I hadn't seen much of. On the 28th of October 1941, I received yet another draft ship to HMS Dolphin, Gosport Hants. I thought at the time that I was being drafted there as a establishment wireless operator, but I was informed by the medic that he examined me, "You are fit for submarines." And I thought, blooming hang. No question of volunteering. You were detailed. I think I did say I haven't volunteered for submarines, and was politely told that when I signed my papers to join the Navy, I signed to serve on any HM ship, and submarines were HM ships. So I landed in submarines, coming from a battler or a battleship into a submarine.
How did you get on with the training at Gosport?
Rather out of my sphere. The training in Gosport consisted of going through the DSEA course, David's Escape Apparatus. We received a small bit of instruction on how to use the Davis Escape, and lucky for me, at that time the escape tank in Dolphin was 30 foot deep. I understand now that it's 300 foot, and in the escape tank they'd fitted a Davis escape chamber as opposed to the twill trunk method. I remember going in with two others and the compartment was flooded, and when the pressure was equalized the lid opened. And I'm afraid this sailor did the whole trip upward 30 feet, which wasn't really deep, with my breath held. I never even used the DSEA, although it was hanging onto my face. And I never had occasion for the rest of my submarine career ever to put another mask on. Thank goodness.
Was it unpleasant, the mask?
It was to me. I just couldn't... Mind you, I was a bit dumb, wasn't I? I didn't take in the instructions I was given. So I thought the easiest way out of it was to keep my breath shut, hang on to me air, which was easy enough, it was only 30 foot. So that was my DSEA, and on the papers they've got them past DSEA course. I would have written thankfully, because I just didn't, did I? Now then, I was at Dolphin, or attached to Dolphin, from the 29th of October 41 to the 19th of February 42, during which time I was drafted.